Was this podcast a mistake or a blessing, Peter?
What do you mean?
Do you like? Are you glad you've done it? We're now 2+ years in.
So glad.
Before we begin, we're going over questions and terminology that are common in the VC side. One, people are, our audience wants to be, you know, want to become VCs. So we're covering it from both the VC side and then the founder side. So one of my questions before we start is, and maybe this should be a podcast of its own, is if you're a founder, what are the signs that a hostile takeover is coming? Dun, dun, dun.
I mean, so hostile takeovers only really happen, I don't know, the term hostile takeover really applies to like publicly traded companies where somebody comes in and starts buying up your stock until they own a majority of it.
Okay.
Right. And they take over the business and then vote you out. What can happen in the startup land is, I mean, you could have a rebellion of your staff, right? So they could go to the investors on the board and basically say, this founder's crazy. They're driving this company into the ground. We need to step in and save this company because we love the company and our jobs and everything else, and convince the investor to basically step in and provide an ultimatum to the CEO. Another thing that oftentimes, this happens less often now because over the last decade or so, you know, everything around venture investing and startups has really shifted to be uber founder friendly. And so it used to be that it was more common for a first-time founder or a young founder that would start a company to be replaced by a more seasoned professional, you know, manager or set of managers as a company grew and hit a certain scale. That still occasionally happens, but more often than not today, that's chosen by the founder because the founder looks at like their skills and abilities and has enough self-awareness to know that they're kind of tapping out their potential and that somebody else with different expertise and experience would be better suited in that role. And so they'll take a step back. Sometimes that's something that the founders and the VCs or other investors on the board will work towards and come to that conclusion together. But honestly, like it's pretty rare that a company has a full blown like hostile takeover in the same way that, you know, publicly traded companies do. Because honestly, like everything in venture is kind of a momentum game. And if the company is losing momentum, then a lot of VCs will just kind of write off the investment and move on to, you know, the next one.
And you won't be invited to the Christmas party or something like that.
And you won't be invited to the Christmas. No, they just won't give you more money. So eventually mm-hmm. you'll shut down. Right.
Yeah. So,
and part of that is because VCs, like there's no, I mean, some VCs can come in and like start restructuring things and pissing people off, but then that just hurts their reputation. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really do a whole lot from a returns perspective. Like maybe they can salvage and get their money back, right? But it's not going to be the fund that, or the investment that returns the fund. So, you know, in those cases, it's kind of like you're weighing this reputational risk versus the risk of losing some additional capital. And a lot of VCs, especially, you know, if you understand the power law, will lean towards, no, we're just going to focus on our winners and we'll write off the losers.
But sometimes it happens. Usually I would say it happens before the investor puts the cash in.
So what do you mean by that?
So if an investor likes a deal, but they don't like particular people involved, they're going to make
their investment contingent.
Yeah, they'll make, like it could actually be in the terms.
So is there that hostile though? Or is it just like, hey, look, here's the deal.
To the founder, it feels very hostile. There is one very well-known founder in their Series C.
Yeah.
Part of the term sheets that were going around was that at contingent of the funding is that this founder would get replaced.
Yeah.
And somehow 15 years later, this founder is still there.
Yeah.
So in that case, it was in the term sheet.
Yeah, well, but look, he's still there or she's still there. And that's because, you know, it can feel hostile, but at the same time, like VCs submit term sheets. Mm-hmm. Nobody forces you to take them.
Yep. Another sign I've seen is sometimes you'll have activist investors.
Yeah.
where they'll come through and they'll just ask to buy you out. In that case, you would kind of see it coming.
Yeah.
Hey, I like sometimes. What you've done here, but I don't like your trajectory, and I'm going to take over, and here's your check.
Yeah, I mean, you don't see that as much on the venture side, because as a VC, if I am buying out a founder or if I'm replacing a founder, it's kind of like I failed, right? Like, I should have been backing really great founders that don't need to be replaced, right? And if it gets to a point where they need to be replaced, then I kind of screwed up, right?
Do you think the trend's going to switch?
Well, I think it's already swung back towards and being, you know, investor favorable. But, you know, as long as there's more capital than good deals to be done, things will always kind of sit on the founder friendly side of things. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. You know, Mark Andreessen is famous for saying something along the lines of, like, your job as a venture capitalist is to get into the handful of deals that matter in any given year, and that's it. And so it's like, okay, well, if there's only a handful of deals that really matter in any given year, then you should do whatever you can to get into those deals. And that oftentimes means that you are being very founder friendly to convince them to take your money versus somebody else's. Because if you miss out on that handful of deals, you're not going to end up getting the returns you need to raise your next fund and so on and so forth.
Okay. One of the things I'd point out is that I think typically when hostile takeovers happen, they happen more on the angel side than on the VC side. True or false?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I see that. I see sometimes, like, and this is before they ever make it to a venture, or they never make it to a venture round, where the angel comes in, the entrepreneur's young, they're having some success, the angel's like, this is cool, I'm going to invest, I'm going to be really involved, and then little by little, like, they end up just controlling more and more and more of the company.
And the two founders go from 50-50 to, like, 2 or 3% each.
Yep. But it's very rare that those companies end up being able to raise more money and or be end up being very successful. Mm-hmm. Because, like, again, that gets back to this idea that what you want at the angel stage, at the seed stage and pre-seed stage, is you're really swinging for the fences as hard as you can. And you really want, like, really great product or really great company founder fit and founder market fit. So if you're stepping in and being like, these guys are idiots, I'm going to take over and run this thing. Now, all of a sudden, you've just bought yourself a job. Are you really the best person to do that? Typically, no. And so those companies don't end up being super successful. And on top of that, like, the VCs are just kind of like, eh, I don't know if this is the right fit. There are exceptions to that. So, like, when we are an investor in Instructure, the two founders, Brian and Devlin, like, they started the company, but they also had the self-awareness that eventually they were like, you know what, Josh Coates, like, we really need you to come in and take over. We lack, you know, the ability to really take this where it needs to go. They recognized that, and they brought in Josh Coates to be the CEO, where he had earlier been the major angel investor behind the company. And, you know, he was able to really help that company grow a tremendous amount. There's, you know, a definite inflection point from before and after he took the helm. And that's nothing against Brian and Devlin. Like, if anything, like, I have mad respect for them to be that self-aware. So, like, was it a hostile takeover? Not really, because they invited him in.
Okay. Well, got it. Well, I thought that was one of the things I'd want to cover, because I know people have asked and I've seen it many times, typically more on the angel side.
Yeah.
Than on the VC side.
This is where it's important as a founder to really know who your angel investors are and get a feel for them. And if, like, they haven't done a lot of tech deals and they are writing a big check and anticipating getting, like, really involved, that should be setting off all kinds of red flags in your mind.
Also doing due diligence.
What do you mean?
Like, checking out the background on who these individuals are.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you should do your own homework on these people.
I think too often there's very few people who get an offer for an investment and they don't take it.
Yeah, because they, you know, that they're desperate, right, to raise money, and
it takes a lot of discipline.
Yeah, and look, I'm not necessarily saying you don't take their money, but you got to know what you're getting yourself into and not have rose-colored glasses going into it, right? got to know that, like, there's a good chance that, you know, if this angel investor has a history of pulling shenanigans like hostile takeovers, they're probably going to try to do it to you too, right? So you want to build in precautions and safeguards to protect against that. So maybe you take a smaller check from them. Maybe you don't give on every term that they want. Because, look, you're going to pour your heart into these companies, blood, sweat, tears. Like, the tragedy is somebody that takes that money, they put everything into it over the, you know, a couple of years, and then an angel investor, like, pushes them out and takes over. And then it's like, man, they just lost a couple of years that they could have been doing something else. And so it's like almost like not even worth taking their money.
Very true. Very true. I've seen it happen a handful of times. It's always sad when it happens.
Yeah. I would say, like, another big red flag is, like, angel investors that have no background or no expertise in your space writing big checks into your space or asking for terms that are, like, outside of the traditional standard terms. Like, if you are... And this is where it's so important to work with a really good attorney who does these types of transactions every single day. They're going to be able to look at the docs and the terms that are being proposed by the angel and be able to tell you, like, this is market, this is not, right? And just having that sort of guidance can be incredibly valuable when, one, pushing back, and two, like, if they won't budge, then that should be a massive red flag that this is not a sophisticated angel investor and probably not somebody you want on your cap table.
Well said. All right, guys, go to venture.capital.fm. We want to hear from you, so you can follow us on Instagram and LinkedIn. If you have questions you want us to address, ping us, you know, there, LinkedIn, Twitter, and let's go. Thanks, guys. Join us for the next episode.